Hello, welcome everyone to another exciting episode of the Pulse Podcast. I am Dr. Tazeen Rizvi, your host for today. And with me, I'm very excited today because we have an amazing guest, Dr. Safwan Buttigieg, who is a clinician, but a public health medicine specialist. He is a public speaker, he's a lecturer, he's a podcaster, and he's on a mission to change the digital health and digital health data for all. So welcome, Dr. Stefan.
Thanks, Tazeen. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So why don't you tell us about your journey? What started your digital health and public health journey?
Okay, so I would go way back to my sixth form days. I don't know if you've been to a sixth form, but the choice there was inevitably either like very, very kind of binary. Either biology or chemistry or maths and physics or languages, pretty, you know, like this or that. And inevitably, I simply remember getting high marks in my biology and as a result, kind of gravitating towards that field. Yeah. Chemistry wasn't my forte. Let's put that on the table right now. So it was quite a challenge, but nevertheless, I worked hard. I remember doing some private lessons in chemistry to kind of catch up. And I then decided to go for the doctor track, the medicine track. And I kicked off my medical school. Of course, there was always kind of this inner conflict within me to kind of balance my technological side to the medical side. There was very much the disparity between what's happening in the medical world, which was very much, you know, still reliant on old technology such as paper, and, you know, this deep desire within me to kind of see things change. And as I started my foundation program, I remember getting quite nervous, like doing night shifts and really nervous seeing all that old technology being in use. And like, oh no, paper again, I have to go there, I have to do this and that. So it constantly started getting a bit frustrating. And this, you know, sometimes there was like this, there was some technology being used, you know, we had the packs and wrists, and then there was like some on the other side, you know, you still see the clinical documentation. So at the end of the day, I said, okay, what is the best possible route right now to continue on this digital health journey? And inevitably, it got me towards a population health approach and where I went to public health, which made a lot of sense. At first, when I started the journey, I was wondering, what does public health have to do with digital health? There's so much to learn in digital health that, you know, it's going to be challenging to even go there. But actually, it was the right choice to do. And it gave me a lot of insight as well into how to apply population health level, you know, and even digital health is all about cultural transformation. Absolutely. It's all about transforming, you know, behaviors and changing behaviors. And then basically, you know, I finished my public health specialization. That happened during COVID. So there were like some little bit of delays, but, you know, that was natural. It was to be expected. Everyone was under duress and massive stress. But then finally became a specialist. And now, you know, I've already done 2 years of my specialty. And I'm constantly evolving my work into digital health and health data within the Ministry for Health. Of course, it seems like I have some endless source of energy from somewhere. And I also do some lecturing, you know, podcasting.
You had a lot of different things, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
I try.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's always so good to see clinicians who are venturing out in this space of digital health, which somehow we kind of think it's outside of health, but it's not. Public health, community health, population health, digital health, health data. Actually, they all form this health ecosystem and actually play a very equal parts. And, you know, it's so important and it's so exciting to see clinicians. And as we were talking before the podcast as well, that it's always so good to talk to people who want to do something different out of the box, because we've been taught as clinicians to just look at data and infer from the data and just apply that. But there's so much more. We need to change the culture, especially with technology and especially with the issues we have in public health and community health. I think digital technology has such a big role to play. And especially, I know you are very passionate about what we can do with health data. So where did that inspiration come, that you want people to understand what health data can do and explain to them that it's not that difficult to use health data and health data technologies to improve population and public health?
It all started from the COVID-19 pandemic, actually. So before, I was more focused on digital health, and getting like making digital health work, and if you have this app, it will solve all your problems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
But
I heard that a lot. Yeah.
let's be careful. But in reality, you then discover that at the end, it's not about digital health only. It's all about the health data, which is enabling that application, which is making. So you need to go into the real basis. You might have the best digital health app in the world, but if the data is, excuse my language here, crap,
True.
then it won't be effective, your digital health application. So it is then when I started realizing the strong role that health data has. Like from the beginning, like you have to train the people who are putting the data on the system. You have to, even now as we evolve further and bring in AI technologies into the picture, you have to ensure that the AI is trained in a way which understands the medical notes which are being transcribed and coming up with something new. So we have all this evolution where we don't have to consider, we don't only consider just, the end application which showcases everything, but we all consider all the pathway, data governance, translating that data from simple dirty raw data into information and then eventually knowledge. So now we're even kind of seeing an extra step after knowledge, which is the applied knowledge. What is the outcome of that applied knowledge? Because you might have knowledge, but then when you apply that knowledge, something else happens, which is totally unexpected. So
Yeah.
now we're seeing even on the old traditional Donna-Beadian model, like this input process output, these three-step approach. Now we're seeing an evolution of that. How
True.
it is kind of that knowledge translating, like how when it is applied, what happens, and how is that evolving? So that's kind of the really next big step, next big trajectory, when you look at all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of health leaders I talk to and organizations, and I ask you, so how digitally enabled are your processes? And they would say, oh yeah, we have a telemedicine platform. And
Okay.
I always say that that's just one. We're just scratching the surface. Just collecting data virtually, having an EMR, having an EHR, having a teleconsultation platform, that's great. But that's just the start, as you said. What it does is it gives you the data. Now that's where the power of technology lies. How are we as clinicians or as a healthcare professional using that data to improve population health, to improve community health, to improve individual health? And that's why data is definitely, I think, probably the core that literally fuels everything that comes out of technology is how are we data using this data? And very interestingly, I know you talk a lot about, which is such an important topic, how ready are our healthcare organizations, public health organizations on readiness of using this data? And how can we help them to enable a culture where people understand what is data, how it's used, how it's applied, as you said?
I mean, first we need to start with awareness, of course.
Yeah.
So we need to get people to have that eureka. Aha, I can do that?
Yeah.
Really? Whoa. So you can, so if we need to start off from that first. After that, then what comes is the real hard stuff, because that's where the culture change starts happening. In fact, before, when I used to, start my lectures on digital health, I used to kind of think of digital health as just the intersection of technology with healthcare. Then that definition evolved even further, where it was about, society then. And now, thanks to some inspiration from the medical futurists like Dr. Bertalan Meskó, now I'm even looking at digital health as being the cultural transformation. So wherever it happens, in reality, we need to be in a healthcare organization that is ready to transform, ready to change. So you might have the best digital health application, the best leader, the most inspirational leader, hopefully, you know, inspiration. But if the culture is not ready to change, then it's simply going to take longer.
Absolutely.
So that is kind of the challenges. So, and then, you know, there are a couple of tools that can be used, and there are readiness assessment tools that can be, you know, distributed across organizations to kind of start figuring out, especially the pain points of that particular organization. Because if you start working on those, then you start building trust, and when you start building trust, you bring towards you, you know, resources. And when you start building resources, you can build teams. And when you can build teams, you can scale up and scale up interventions significantly to such an extent that you keep on building even more trust. So you have all this, like, very the positive cycle of events that needs to happen. And that needs to happen really and truly, you know, by first and foremost, kind of trying to understand and seeing if your organization is ready to change. And if it is not ready to change, start making like baby steps to get towards that transformation.
You cannot overhaul a complete system, especially in healthcare. That doesn't work. You can't strip a traditional workflow and, you know, put another one in its place. It's much more difficult. Healthcare is a lot of moving parts. It's very complex. Very interestingly, you mentioned something which will bring me to my next question is, you said trust. So a lot of apprehension that we see, I'm sure you have seen in your career as well, people don't really trust sharing health data online. Mm-hmm. Patients are scared of it. Clinicians are always saying, you know, we don't know how safe it is. So how do how can we challenge that and address that, the lack of trust in data sharing, security of data, patient confidentiality?
So for example, we really need to question who is generating that data, first and foremost. If a surgery, for example, is being done on me or on anyone else, and data is being collected about me, whose data is that? We need to have these answers to these questions. Of course, it's true. It's the healthcare professional who might, you know, type up the operation note. It might be the nurse who might be writing the parameters. It might be the surgery happening within that same organization. But in reality, whose data is that? I think those are the questions that we need to start answering. Absolutely. And then when we start realizing the answers to those questions, then we'll be much more sensitive to the demands and needs of all the different stakeholders, including patients. We start understanding that, yes, patients might want to know what was the exact procedure that was done on them.
True.
They might want to know. So they won't. Patients, you know, in this day and age, they're not just satisfied with saying, you know, for example, I did something, for example, on my hip. Mm-hmm. No, they want to know what kind of procedure they did. What was the approach? It's very important because we really need to move away from a paternalistic approach. Mm-hmm. where we say, the healthcare professional, you know, is a god. In reality, that's kind of that we need to be wary of this. That this approach is simply not scalable anymore.
True, but absolutely.
If we had to be really business and operative about all of this, it is simply not scalable anymore.
True, yeah. And so important, as you very rightly said, we have to answer that question, whose data it is. And who owns this data? Who can share it? Who can share what? And I think that's where I think awareness comes in. Digital health literacy comes in. That are we really teaching? Let's put patients aside. You being a clinician, are we really facilitating doctors with the knowledge that they need to understand or to answer these questions? Whose data is it? How should they use these data? How should they use the digital health tools? So do you think we are trying to facilitate the current healthcare professionals, or are we teaching that? I know you give a lot of lectures. You've given 50 plus engagements. So as a lecturer, how important do you think it is to really make clinicians understand the value of this health data?
So, but we need to also, you know, like if I wear the doctor hat right now, I'd like to know what I'm up to. I'd like to know how many procedures have I done. I'd like to know, you know, like what were the outcomes of my procedures, possibly in a discrete way, which are targeted specifically to me. Maybe my head of the department, for example, you know, like having this targeted information that comes back to me. So that whenever I decide to put in data, when I decide to, you know, record an encounter, when I decide to, you know, to speak to a patient and to have like an appointment and input the data, I get some feedback back. I get something back so that they start seeing the value. Something as simple, for example, you know, as doctors, we're very much used to, you know, long text, you know, writing a whole, you know, essay. Like about a patient, like writing a whole book about a patient even. But when it comes to kind of like settling down to one diagnosis, you know, we get kind of shaky. We say, it might be this or it might be that, but not this diagnosis. Of course, now that artificial intelligence techniques are coming into picture, natural language processing, you know, we're seeing now even generative AIs coming into the picture. Most of this process will get easier and easier, especially of clinical coding. But the doctor needs to say, all right, okay, or the healthcare professional needs to say, all right, I'm willing to give that little extra 1 or 2 minutes, for example, to make sure that my note is structured in a way that makes sense, not simply just writing a whole story without coming to the clinical conclusion. But then all of that process needs to be complemented with possibilities, for example, of seeing your own reports, how am I doing, and having it personalized to you.
True.
Because then when you start seeing something, you start, all right, and then there's like this positive feedback cycle. So I see, all right, I haven't seen that many diabetes type 2 patients, for example. Okay, and why is that happening? But I actually saw 50. Because I'm not recording it. All right, so let me do an extra effort, and it starts coming back to you. So this is the kind of, you know, systems that we need to design, that we really work closely with doctors and make sure that the healthcare professionals, the data that they're inputting, it comes back to them. They will be able to, and they might not need to do like a whole audit or a whole, you know, design a whole research to kind of come to the conclusion that they've seen, for example, 100 patients with that condition. It will actually come up in real time. They will be able to search there and then, so that they focus really and truly on much deeper, much less superficial, you know, because we really are kind of stuck in the superficial analysis. I've seen this, this, and this. Oh, great. But in reality, how many, for example, have I seen? How many patients have I seen with this condition that are with this medication and have this specific genome?
True.
Those are the questions that we need to start answering.
And we have to go deeper. And I think this is something, as a public health medicine specialist, you want to know, you want to go deeper, you want to know how to improve community health, because we need to go down and see how can we reduce the burden of disease that we see. I think pandemic, COVID really taught us how unprepared we are really to deal with any public health emergency, because we just are not working on that level, as you said. So how do you think, as a public health specialist, policymakers and public health and clinicians can work together and use technology to, as you said in your words, to go deeper, really go down to the root cause of the problems?
Of course, it's also very important that public health physicians are also on the ground. So sometimes there's this bias that you really need to be careful of, which is like the data bias, where you just see the data and you say, it's like that for sure. But really and truly, the data that is ascertained needs to be complemented by on the ground interviews, by speaking to the right people and ensuring that this then makes sense and kind of go deeper as well. So there is like this experience, you know, that you need to go into. And then you can go with all of that to the policymaker to come to a decision. Of course, the policymaker might have different priorities. And that's our role as public health physicians, to kind of bring everything to the table, including the data, the modeling, the insights, the on-the-ground insights, so that we take a really, you know, evidence-based approach.
Disagree.
There will be other factors coming into the picture, but the more data that we have, the more we think outside the box and try to understand not only, for example, just like the data, but the data in the context of something else happening. For example, data in the context of a news item which happened like five hours before that, and because of that, there are more telemedicine calls on that with that specific diagnosis.
Yeah.
But up till now, we haven't set up, or not everywhere at least, there aren't all the data architectures in place to see this real-time changes happening, because we haven't set up the infrastructure yet, or we haven't set up the application or data infrastructure to do that. Yeah. So that's the race against time for public health physicians to guide these different data infrastructures so that they can come quicker and help the policymaker to make even better decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think regulations and policymakers also need to be much faster, because right now I feel the technology is running at a faster pace than regulations, the policymaker, the public health specialist. And we really need to, you know, start working at that pace to at least make use of the technology that is available. And I mean, I think we can talk on hours on this, but I want to end this on a question and a question that I get asked a lot, and I think I'm sure you do. What advice would you give to a clinician who wants to venture into this space of public health, digital health, a digital health mentor, as you've become, somebody who talks about data, somebody who has his own podcast? So what advice would you give to doctors who aspire to be like you?
So I think the first thing that I would tell them to do is to kind of find the low-hanging fruits, find the pain points, find those unmet needs, and solve that one problem first. And then continuously build from that. So for example, in my case, I remember grabbing a paper-based infectious disease notification form and converting it into an electronic form. And then the benefits started coming out slowly. People started seeing. And then I took that information and went to present it in a small conference. And then because that happened, and see that people started realizing, we should set up a full system. And then COVID came into the picture, you know. And so there are all these little bit of wins in there that you should really focus on. But try to understand, what are the unmet needs? What are the pain points? Because then once you start answering those different pain points, and once you start tackling them, then you start building trust in your capabilities. And then people will want to work with you. And then because people will want to work with you, will have more time to speak about it. And then because you speak about it, more people will know about you. So slowly and steadily, you build up. Of course, there might be, you know, opportunities where you grow up very quickly and you still need to be ready for that. And that happens through your building up of knowledge over a period of time. Like, especially for aspiring doctors, and especially with artificial intelligence coming in so strongly, I have one big recommendation. Be curious. Try to understand why that is happening, how that artificial intelligence technique came to that conclusion. Try to get these questions answered. Show curiosity. Be curious. Try to figure out. Ask the right questions. Do not be afraid to ask questions. It can come. There might be some resistance at first, but keep persisting and be consistent.
No, that's very well said. And absolutely. And I think we didn't even get to talk about ChatGPT. We should definitely
have another one.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking time out from your really busy schedule. And I hope you had a good time. We would definitely have a discussion again on ChatGPT and more.
All right.
On how AI is changing, is continuously evolving and changing the future of healthcare. Thank you for really joining this podcast. Thank you to all the listeners. Please follow our page and for more updates. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you, Tazi.
Thank you.